Blog Talk Radio.
For a day headquarters in Miguanago, Wisconsin. Fat Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents to you another episode of the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host and said Fat Guy with a Phone, Rick Goreski, coming to you with the Week 5 preview show. Before we get her done, let me bring in my special guest and co-host for today's show. He once saw Joe DiMaggio in Dinky Donuts, and he is one of only a handful of my friends that knew ahead of time that having sex with the cleaning lady on your desk is something that management frowns upon. Please welcome the owner of the Legion of Doom, the owner who I am on record since draft day as stating will be crowned king in 2015, Kurt Kujawa. Thanks for coming on the show tonight, Kurt.
Thanks a lot, Rick. Appreciate it, man.
Hey. Before we get out the darts and predict Week 5, let's go ahead and review where we are with one-third of the regular season under our belt. Believe it or not, four games in, it's a 12-game regular season. We're a third of the way in. Why don't you start us off, if you don't mind?
All right. One second here.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about what teams, like records, big picture stuff for the league.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's see. We got two teams that are undefeated. Both are in the Renaissance Conference, and oddly enough, they are brothers, Steve and Andy Wellman. They are a perfect 4-0. And we got one team, the Made Men, who have yet to log a win. So, not good
on the
for
points,
them.
Yeah, pretty cool. It must be, I don't know what their mom was drinking, but it's in the water. Both of those guys have 4-0 records. Most points scored for the league after one-third of the way into the season. All but six teams in the league have hit the 300-point mark. As of this broadcast, the Kenosha Commandos have scored the most points in the league with 395 points in four games. That's obviously almost a pace of 100 points a game. Lost in the Sauce is only 9 points behind Kenosha, followed by the Hurricanes, who are 19 points back. Meat Puppets are 23 points back, and Damage Inc. rounds out the top five, 39 points off the leader pace. What the hell is that called, the pace car? What the hell is the lead car called in a race? The pace car is
right,
what like paces
car.
Them. But what's the guy you're that's right. winning? Is it the point? I don't know.
The lead car?
My wife is mocking me in the background going, the winner. Fewest points scored goes to the Champs of Chaos with 243 points, followed by Pale Riders at 267. I'm right now 243 points divided by four is 60.75 points a game. So not going to win a lot at 60 points a game in King for a Day. Pale Riders at 267 for you, 2 NV. Not a lot to envy this year, 279 points on the season. Actually, I thought Bork's team was better than that, too. I'm surprised by that low number. Most points scored against is next. It should come as no surprise that the winless Made Men lead the way, having had 381 points scored against them after 4 weeks. I mean, man, that's 95.25 points per game. The Beerman's Brawlers are next, having faced 371 points a game. 371 divided by 4 is 92.75 points a game. That's brutal, too. And then you have the Old Helm Ogres and the Champs of Chaos, both at 364 points a game. 364 points on the season comes out to 91 points per game. How about the power rankings, Kurt?
Let's see. For power rankings, we show the Kenosha Commandos on top, followed by the Meat Puppets, A-Team, the Skeagle Raiders, and Lost in the Sauce.
Looking at strength of schedule, that shows the Irishmen have had the toughest schedule in the league if you look at opponent record, because there's two different ways to look at this. You can look at, you know, add up all the wins and losses of your opponents, or you can look up scores, the total number of points scored by your opponents. So Irish's opponents have a combined record of 29-19. They're 10 over. Next closest is the Bierman Brawlers at 28-20. Now, as I was mentioning, if you judge by total opponent points, the toughest schedule in the league would be the Champs of Chaos, whose opponents have combined for 4,127 points. And to put that into perspective, because numbers, when you're, you know, hearing something over a radio or your phone, numbers can just all mush together. There are only four teams in all of King for a Day who have faced a combined opponent schedule of 4,000 points or more. The Muskego Raiders, 4,067, Bierman's Brawlers, 4,033, and the Irishmen, 4,027. The Champs are 60 points more scored against them than the next closest team. That's 15 points a week over four games. But again, this is collective, combined, all opponents, scores for all opponents. So it looks like the Irishmen and the Champs of Chaos both have had it pretty rough. What about the easiest schedules?
The easiest schedules thus far are, let's see, by record, are the Dirty Hippies at 20-28 opponent record, or if you look at the opponent points, Damage Inc. has the easiest schedule with 3,587 opponent points.
Wow, that's like 500, 600 points better than Champs.
Yeah.
Toughest division, and I did actually compute all the points for each division. The toughest division, if you look at total wins, is a tie between the blue and the purple divisions with a sum of all wins within the division of 9. So if you add up all the teams in that division for the blue and the purple divisions, each division presents 9 total victories out of that division. The top division by points scored is the gray division with 1,347 points scored, followed by the blue division, 1,331. And I have the numbers here, so I'm just going to read it in case somebody listening wants to hear how their division weighed in. The red division had 1,208 points on the year, purple division 1,291, blue division 1,331, silver 1,231, the gray, again the leader, 1,347, and the gold 1,299. So even though the Renaissance has more 100 point teams, the Gothic Conference has more total points scored. Top players after 3 games. If you're good with it, I'll take the quarterbacks, you take the running backs like we did last time.
Sure.
Great. So top quarterbacks after 3 games, Tom Brady leads the way, 59 points. That's 19.67 points per game. These are put in order of average points per game, so some of the total points might vary. Like Tom Brady has 59. Next second is Aaron Rodgers, who, although he has 71 points on the season, is at 17.75 points a game. Carson Palmer, third, 63 points. That's 15.75 a game.
Let's see, for the running backs, Devontae Freeman at 57 points with a 14.25 points per game. Then comes Jamal Charles with 42 points. It's 10.5 points a game. Adrian Peterson with 31 points at 7.75 points a game. Deion Lewis with 22 points, 7.33 points per game. And Jeremy Hill, David Johnson, and Mark Ingram tied with 28 points, 7 points a game.
You know, it's amazing. This is a third of the way into the season. So when you're seeing a guy like David Johnson, Mark Ingram, Deion Lewis, you see these guys up there, that's a third of the way through the season. That's not a fluke. You know, so you're going to see some of these names at the end of the year. Wide receiver, Julio Jones, 51 points. That's an average of 12.75 points a game. Larry Fitzgerald is next. He's actually down 2 points from last week because he fumbled in week 4. So he's at 43 points overall, 10.75 a game. DeAndre Hopkins has scored 40 points this year, 10 points a game. Antonio Brown, 38 points, an average of 9.5 points a game. And Brandon Marshall of the Jets, to me, a big surprise that he's doing this well. 36 points on the year, that's 9 points a game. Over to you for tight ends.
Let's see. Rob Gronkowski, obviously, 33 points. It's 11 points a game. Followed by Tyler Eifert with 30 points. That's 7.5 points a game. Jason Witten with 28 points at 7 points a game. And Greg Olsen and Martellus Bennett with 25 points at 6.25 points a game.
At place kicker, no surprise, Gostkowski leads the way, as he has done for seemingly the last like 3 to 5 years. 35 points, 11.67 points a game. That New England offense, everybody wishes they had a piece of it at this point. Chandler Catanzaro, 41 points. That's 10.25 points a game. He's the Cardinals kicker. Justin Tucker of Baltimore, 39 points, 9.75 points a game. And then in fifth place, a tie, John Brown of the Giants and Cairo Santos of the Chiefs, tied at 38 points. That's 9.5 points a game. I will say that the Cairo Santos 38 points is a bit misleading, because he just put up 21 in week four. So prior to week four, he had 17 points in 3 weeks. You know, that's like 5 points a game. Then he blows up for 21, and his average almost doubles to 9.5 points a game. So, again, one of those players that I hope owners are out there looking at that level of detail and not just taking, oh, this guy is high up on the list and he's a free agent. Dig in and look under the surface and see if he just had a blow-up game. What are the circumstances?
Yeah, you got to look for consistency throughout the week, not just a big game.
And opportunity. Don't be fooled by a guy that filled in or that's going to be phased out, you know, was only in there because of an injury, and he's not going to get that kind of playing time.
Absolutely. Moving on to the defensive line. Surprise, surprise, J.J. Watt leads the way with 37 points at 9.25 points a game, followed by Muhammad Wilkerson and Ziggy Ansah, tied at 30 points with 7.5 points a game. Jacquees Smith with 28 points at 7 points a game, and Aaron Donald and Gerald McCoy at 26 points with 6.5 points a game.
At linebacker, Preston Brown, 47 points on the year, 11.75 points a game, leads the way. Jamie Collins, not far behind, he has 35 points, 11.67 points a game. Thomas Davis, 46 points, 11.5 points a game. DeQuell Jackson, 43 points, 10.75 points a game. And heartbreaker, as Elk Ogletree was tied with Paul Posluszny for fifth place, 40 points a game. That's 10 points a game on average. Both guys hurt. Ogletree, broken fibula, possibly going to be out all year. And then Posluszny, I heard, I don't think he's practiced all week long. Just horrible break for two linebackers that I'm sure guys picked early in the draft.
One saving grace for Ogletree, as they have yet to put him on IR, so we'll see with him.
Yeah, he's got a chance to come back. It's just that particular injury. I've made no secret that I listen to Football Guys, and they have a guy named Dr. Gene Bramall that talks about, you know, obviously he doesn't go out and examine these players, but as a doctor, he knows the injuries, you know, like a broken fibula, and he knows the average recovery time frames for these. And he's saying it's, in his opinion, 10 to 12 weeks, which, you know, the Rams have said maybe 8 weeks on the recovery. So, you know, damn, I got him in my dynasty league, so I'm hoping he comes back too. And that is good news. They haven't slapped him in IR yet, but boy, I feel bad for all the guys in redraft leagues that took him and maybe are faced with the rest of the season without their top linebacker. He was doing great.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have him?
No, I did not, thankfully. I'm dealing with enough injuries on my team.
Well, why don't you take defensive back? Yeah, one of the most surprising players of the year here. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Let's see. Josh Norman leading the way with 48 points at 12 points a game. Rashad Jones and Tyrann Mathieu tied at 40 points, 10.25 points a game, and followed by Eric Weddle and James Igbo.
Can't get away from that name.
I can't. Tied at 38 points with 9.5 points a game.
Just looking at base observations after having gone through that with you, the press, Josh Norman, who has kind of come out of nowhere and he's becoming one of the better corners for Carolina, 12 points a game is actually the highest defensive average out of all the players.
And I'm honestly mistaken, but he's not a safety, correct? He is a cornerback, correct?
Yeah, I believe he's a cornerback. You're right.
Yeah, Devontae, you don't normally see those kind of numbers from cornerbacks.
Not at all. Not very rarely. Devontae Freeman at 14.25 points a game is a shock. And, of course, he had the two big blow-up games that got him a majority of his points. But still, that's a third of the way through the season. Devontae Freeman is scoring the most points on average on the offensive side of the ball. Again, not counting quarterbacks. They're the highest scoring. I mean, but to put it in a perspective, Carson Palmer's at 15.75 points a game. That's only a point and a half more than Devontae Freeman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You are correct.
Gronk at 11 points is the highest. You know, guys, when they draft, they look for that difference from the top guy to the second guy, and Gronkowski at 11 points compared to the next guy at 7.5 points. That's the biggest difference that I see.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's why Gronk goes in the first round, you know, being drafted, because it's that kind of points totals that are going to be the difference in those games that you have.
Yeah, 3.5 points a game over the next closest guy. But let's go ahead and talk about high player totals for the year thus far, including right now the highest point totals for the year include 33 from Aaron Rodgers, that's week 3, 27 points from Devontae Freeman in week 3, 25 points from Ben Roethlisberger in week 2, 23 points from Shazier in week 2, and Andy Dalton in week 3. Those were the high point marks thus far this year. Do you want to do the position by position?
Sure. The high point totals are for positions. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers, week 3 at 33 points. Running back Devontae Freeman, 27 points in week 3. Wide receiver had 24 points from Larry Fitzgerald in week 2. Tight end, 21 points from Rob Gronkowski in week 1 and Greg Olsen in week 3. Kicker had 21 points from Kyrell Santos in week 4. Defensive line, 16 points from J.J. Watt in week 1 and Armonte Bryant and Jacquees Smith in week 2. Linebacker Ryan Shazier had 23 points in week 2 and tied with 18 points with Kerry Williams and Josh Norman in week 1 and Tony Jefferson in week 2.
Hey, let's transition over to Week 5 news. The Gothic Conference had a big 9-player trade go down. The Pale Riders, again, second multiplayer trade in 2 weeks, second in a row. This time he makes it with the Muskego Raiders as his trade partner. The Muskego Raiders send the following to the Pale Riders: Colin Kaepernick, running back David Martin of Tampa Bay, wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins of Houston, Michael Martellus Bennett of Chicago, and Mosley, linebacker from Baltimore. So the Raiders send Kaepernick, Martin, Hopkins, Bennett, and Mosley to the Pale Riders to get that booty. Tom, the Pale Riders, sends the following to the Muskego Raiders: Marcus Mariota, Carlos Williams of Buffalo. God, I got him on my team, and I'm blanking on his first name. The tight end from Tennessee, Walker.
Delaney Walker.
Delaney, that's it. Delaney Walker from Tennessee, and Jenkins, the linebacker from Miami. So he gives up Mariota, Carlos Williams, Delaney Walker, and Jenkins from Miami to get Kaepernick, Martin, Hopkins, Bennett, and Mosley. I'm going to ask you, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but what do you think of this deal? I personally thought Muskego hurt themselves in this one. I liked Mark Kellett's team coming out of the draft, and Mosley is the killer for me. He's the best player in the deal by far. Jenkins got hurt last week. He had a stinger. Mariota is doing great, but he is unproven, and Tennessee is not that great of a team. Williams is out this week with a concussion. I do like Delaney Walker, but you know he's got a little injury history himself, and he already missed the game this year with an injury, so... On the other side, Martin had one of his best games of the season last week. Hopkins is on fire. Bennett had a good game, and he's one of the only, you know, consistent contributors on Chicago's team. Mosley's gold. What are your thoughts on this trade? I mean, it's your direct competition.
Absolute highway robbery. absolute highway robbery, I thought. I mean, Carlos Williams is basically a rental player for a couple of weeks until, Shady McCoy gets back rolling. He will still be involved, but I don't see the kind of production that he has been taking up. Like you said, DeAndre Hopkins, Martellus Bennett, C.J. Mosley. I mean, those are big time players, and I didn't see the Muskego Raiders getting enough back in that trade. I personally voted yes for that trade only because I was happy to see all those players out of my division.
His mind as that deal went down and what maybe negotiations happened that he now can divulge that he wouldn't have, at that very moment told anybody. And we do have Kurt back. You there, bud?
Yep, I'm here.
Great. So what I did is I recapped that trade you made with Tom last week, and I wanted to ask you, you obviously don't judge a trade based on 1 week, but based on last week's scores, you did get the better end of that deal. Eli Manning had 16. Brandon Marshall had 6. Eifert had 3. Bethea had 5. For Tom, Carr had 8. Forsett, 6. Bradham, 8. And Harrison Smith, 5. So if you don't mind sharing with the rest of us, it's not often that we get a chance to hear an owner's logic for making a deal. What were your thoughts on the process? How did this trade come together? And what are your thoughts on it right now?
Well, the trade started out with me just trying to go after Tyler Eifert. I was looking to upgrade my my tight end. And in true Tom fashion, he wanted to do a multiplayer deal. It's so hard to trade with Tom.
He's like the Germany of our trading.
That's
kind of too small scale. I need big stuff.
It's unbelievable. I mean, at one point there was, I think it was like 7 players per side he had thrown out there for me, and you get those big of trades, and you start to go, is this really a fair deal? Am I getting enough back for all this?
In fairness to Tom, he will do the 1-for-1 just as much as he just, you know what I mean? He'll do that 1-for-1 too. So go ahead.
Yeah.
He likes the big ones, though.
Absolutely. This all came down, we were kind of going back and forth, taking a player in, putting a player in, back and forth. And finally, I found a deal that I liked. I thought I was upgrading at quarterback from Derek Carr to Eli Manning. Justin Forsett at that point had done nothing for me. I know LeGarrette Blount is a pretty darn good running back as far as goal line go. And with this being a touchdown-only league, goal line backs are good.
Extra value.
Yeah, absolutely. Antonio Gates had yet to play a game, so he was very unproven. I think he will have a good year, but I liked getting Tyler Eifert. Top 5 at least tight ends, I think, by the end of the year. I'm kind of iffy on giving up Bradham, but getting back Brandon Marshall, who had been doing awesome up until that point, I was fine with. And the Harrison Smith Bethea, I think had I not given up Smith, this deal wouldn't have gone down. So I was fine with Bethea. So
what was the point? The player you mentioned that you guys put players back and forth, was there a player added like a Brandon Marshall or something that tipped the scales for you that said, yep, now I'm ready?
No, it was, he wanted Paul Warlow from me big time. Pretty much any trade he had handed out to me, had Warlow in it. And, I was not willing to, give up Warlow. And, but he accepted, Bradham from me. And, that was kind of where it went.
Yeah, I did talk to Tom after the trade went down because I had to get, verification of the trade and everything. And I know that Harrison Smith was a big piece of that for him. He wanted to steady his defensive back spot, and he really liked Smith. So you're right that the deal wouldn't have gotten done without Smith. But, mm-hmm. hey, with that out of the way, let's go ahead and get out the crystal ball. Let's make some predictions. We don't have to hold hands or anything, but let's do this. In the Gothic Conference, it's a battle of the best friends as the 2-2 Damage Inc. takes on the 1-3 Wolf Pack. Looking at the matchups, I like Damage in this one. Mark Ingram against Philadelphia, love it. Freeman against Washington, that's a very Devontae Freeman. Guy's on fire. Can he do it 3 weeks in a row? He's got two 20-point weeks in a row. 27 points in week three, 24 in week four. I guess in one way he's going down 3 points, so he should get 21 this week. Randall Cobb against St. Louis, Donnell against San Francisco, who is screwed. San Francisco screwed at linebacker, so I assume it's going to be hard to cover the tight end. I mean, they're so screwed they traded for the Vikings' Gerald Hodges this past week. All the defensive matchups are great, too, but he still has Ogletree in the lineup, and Ogletree is out with a broken fibula, so I assume he's going to make a move at some point. A lot of times he checks in on Sunday mornings, Damage Inc. Wolfpack has good matches, too. I'm not a big fan of Carlos Hyde. I do like Damage's defense better in this one, so I'm going to go with Damage Inc. How about you, Kurt?
You know, I like what Wolfpack's putting out there. However, like you said, Carlos Hyde, sketchy. The whole San Francisco offense is, you know, after week one, Carlos Hyde looked like a running back to have, but he's since slowed down. James Jones nursing an injury, so he could go either way. Tavon Austin, another one who's not very consistent. But all in all, I think what Damage is putting out there, aside from his quarterback, I think he's going to get it done this week. I like what he's putting out there, as long as he gets Ogletree out of there for sure.
I just can't let go of the Niall Davis thing that he started him, I think, the first, like, two, three weeks. And I know there was one game where he lost that game specifically because he had Davis in his lineup. So he's 2-2 right now, but he easily could be 3-1 and right up there with a lot of the other guys that are 3-1 in the Gothic. Let's move
over
to
Owen. He's been getting killed by Andrew Luck, by the way. Killed.
Yeah, he's been doing it without. He's 2-2, could be 3-1 without a lot from Luck. Imagine if that guy gets hot. Yikes.
Absolutely.
The 0-4 made men, winless made men, look to get their first win of the year at the cost of the 1-3 Pale Riders. This is a tough pick. If you look at this game, based on the Thursday game action, made men started off strong with 9 points and a bonus from their place kicker and 9 points from the defensive back. Made is probably the favorite now because of that, but Pale got 9 points back from DeVonte Hopkins, so they're right in it. I do like the Pale Riders players better overall in this one. Tom's really put his mark on the team with the trades that he's made recently, and I don't think he's done, by the way. Back to this week, I'm going to go.
He already tried to hit me up again.
I'm going to go with the Pale Riders in this one, but I'm not going to be surprised if the Made Men get their first pick of the season or win of the season. What's your pick?
I think I'm also going with the Pale Riders. I'm loving what he's putting out there right now. Obviously, Antonio Gates. We'll see what he does on Monday night, but. You know, Justin Forsett, I think, he's got a great matchup against Cleveland. Jeremy Hill could go either way against Seattle. You got that Derek Carr, Amari Cooper tandem there. And God help everybody once Kuechly gets back, because Levante David, C.J. Mosley, and Kuechly, it's going to be a tough defense to go against, that's for sure. I'm pretty sure I don't play him this year, but thank God.
Well, next up in a battle, speaking of your team, next up in a battle of 3-1 teams, your team, the Legion of Doom, takes on the suddenly streaking D-Risk. Let me say what I wrote. You know, I write for everybody out there. I write the scripts to these shows beforehand so that we can have a nice, crisp flow of information. And I toggle back and forth as the show's going on between running the show, keeping everything going, watching the time, and then giving my own thoughts. So there's still room for open dialogue, but I review the games and the matchups ahead of the show, and then I write down notes about my thoughts so that I can jump into my role at any given time. So here's what happened. I'm looking at your team, Kurt, and I open it up and I say to myself, all right, Eli Manning, San Francisco, I'm going top down, looks good. Forte against Kansas City, wow, that's really good. Yeldon against Tampa Bay, I'm like, oh, Brown, San Diego, oh, whoa. Robinson, Tampa Bay, oh, these are great matchups. I mean, every time, I literally caught myself at that moment, I was kind of capturing, it was just kind of like, just making noises. I was like, whoa, the matchups are just getting better and better. So at this point, I don't even know D-Risk's lineup, and I'm already on board with your team for the week because, you know, great team with great matchups equals a win in my book. For D-Risk, after looking their team over, they do have two matchups that I really liked that I considered kind of plus matchups, and that was Peyton Manning against Oakland and Kelsey against Chicago. But that's all he's got that's up to the level of the matchups you have this week, so I'm picking your team. What's your take?
Well, I think I'm obviously going to pick my own team, but, you know, I'll tell you right now, Giovanni Bernard has been on a tear. Granted, he's playing Seattle, but, you know, like I said, he's been on a tear. He could have a good game. Jeremy Maclin also been on a tear against Chicago. As you were pointing out, Travis Kelce, but I also think Jeremy Maclin could have a big game as well. I already survived a 0 point for J.J. Watt, which was huge for me from Thursday night. But, I think I have a great shot at winning here.
Well, next up, two of your boys, Blue. Going a little old school there. 2-2-2 teams do battle as Make It Rain takes on 4U2 NV. Pete's probably getting pissed hearing me talk bad about his team, but I just can't warm up to some of the players that he has this year. And, Pete, if you're out there, it's nothing personal. I hate Harvin as a player in fantasy football. For this week, I don't understand starting Starks. That maybe that's the best that he's got. I didn't have time to dig into his whole roster, but Lacy's going to play against St. Louis, right? I mean, I'm not that high on Graham this year, especially against Cincinnati. For 4U2 and V, I do love the Woodhead matchup, dirtiest name in fantasy football. He's going up against Pittsburgh. Edelman against Dallas, that's very nice. Beckham against the Niners has a lot of potential. The defensive matchups aren't bad either. The defensive lineman up against Chicago. He's got Darby against Baltimore, Clay Matthews against St. Louis, and Tao against Pittsburgh. I don't like Unga, and mark my words, I'm saying it out loud, that Unga's best games are behind him. It's done. With Beeson healthy, he's taken over. Unless Beeson gets hurt, that would be the only way that Unga's going to go back to being a startable defensive player. So, overall, I'm taking 4U2 NV. How about you?
I found this one a little bit tough. I hear what you're saying about Make It Rain. The James Starks thing, I think I would probably take my chances with Andre Ellington over James Starks. But, Calvin Johnson, he's due, man. Percy Harvin with Sammy Watkins being out could go. I think this is going to be a huge week for Jordan Matthews. His defense, it's a little suspect, to be quite honest with you. However, you know, on the flip side, Russell Wilson for 4U2 NV, I think will have a decent game. Chris Johnson coming out of nowhere. Julian Edelman back from a bye week should be a big for Bork's team. Odell Beckham Jr.'s got a great matchup. I think I'm going to go with you on that. 4U2 NV wins this one.
Okay, next up, the 3-1 A-team takes on the 2-2 Old Helm Ogres in another Battle of the Buds. For the A-team, Jamal Charles against Chicago is a dream come true for a fantasy player. I think he's going to have two touchdowns and at least 120 total yards on offense, maybe more. I've said before, I think Julio Jones is going to finish as the top wide receiver in fantasy football this year. Love him at home against the Washington. That's 100 yards and a touchdown at least there. Brandon Cooks has a shot this week to actually put up possibly his best game of the year. And Aiken from Baltimore was impressive last week. I don't know if you got a chance to see that Thursday night game when Steve Smith went out and Baltimore was making their comeback. Aiken was just fantastic, and I think he could be a sleeper this week if Smith is out. I'm not on board with Barnage at tight end, but the guy has been getting targets, so maybe he's going to prove me wrong. Poslowski is hurt from what I think. He's not going to play. Hopefully A-Team's going to change him out of the lineup or set some backups to make sure that he has that he's not going to play one short. Not impressed with the defensive matchups for A-Team. For the Ogres, I can't get excited about Stafford until I see their offense start to aggressively target Calvin Johnson again. I just can't. It kills me because I know they can do so much more. Lacy and Gurley love their matchups this week. I think they'll both do well. Fitzgerald and Demaryius Thomas, great matchups as well. Wagner and Brown are nice on defense along with Vaccaro. So I'm going to go with the Ogres. What's your take, Kurt?
Yeah, I'm also probably going to go with the Ogres. You said Brandon Cooks for the A-Team. He's yet to do anything right now. I'm not really sure this is going to be his week this week either. Same with the tight ends. Of course, he doesn't really have any other choice but Gary Barnage, but I don't see anything happening there. Not liking starting three defensive backs instead of maybe three defensive linemen, linebackers I would have went with. I think the Ogres are going to take this one. He's got very good matchups this week.
Well, hey, last but not least from the Gothic Conference, the 3-1 Muskego Raiders take their newly traded players in the battle against the 2-2 Hurricanes. This is a very even matchup if you look at each lineup for this week. And, boy, Muskego has Mariota against Buffalo, and Buffalo has been giving up a lot of passing yards and touchdowns to opposing quarterbacks. Gore already has 6 points on the board, courtesy of the Thursday night game against Houston. Vincent Jackson was awesome last week. That was vintage Vincent Jackson that we haven't seen in a while. He could have quite an encore against Jacksonville this week. Keenan Allen against Pittsburgh is a nice matchup. Delanie Walker against Buffalo is a good one, too. Jock Smith against Jacksonville, also good. But I don't like the rest of the defensive matchups for Muskego. For the Hurricanes, Brady against Dallas with a week off, that should be good for three touchdowns, and at least one or two should go to Gronkowski. Dallas's linebacker situation is not good. Deion Lewis is a wild card every week. The guy's like a slot machine. You can just pull that handle, and that could pay off at any time. I hate the Hillman thing. I've said it all year long. I just don't. I know Hillman's breaking runs here and there. I just can't get behind a guy that is just a part-time. It's kind of like the Starks thing about Pete. I don't get behind starting the number two. I don't get that. Laurinaitis should pick up the slack of Ogletree being out, so that should be an increase for Laurinaitis' numbers. Weddle and Cyprin are great. I still can't believe Ken got Cyprin off waivers. Anyway, back to this week, I'll take the Hurricanes based on the Brady-New England factor. How about you?
I'm also taking the Hurricanes. Exactly what you're saying. Brady, Gronkowski, Deion Lewis is good for a minimum of 3 points a week, if not more. I totally disagree with you on Ronnie Hillman. I think he, within the next few weeks, will find himself as the number one running back in Denver. He's gonna start lighting things up. I'm going with the Hurricanes.
Gotcha. Me too. This is not how I planned it, but we're running out of time. So what I would like to do, if you're up for it, is let's shut this show down and we'll make a part two of this preview show. We'll hop over and we'll do the Renaissance Conference and then call it a night.
Sounds good to me.
You up for that? All right, so let's go ahead. Do you have a favorite wrestler? Let's see here.
I love Superfly.
Yeah, Snuka. I think I've got Snuka here. All right, we're going to end the show with Superfly, Jimmy Snuka. See you on the other side there, Kurt. Give me about 2 minutes to set things up.
Okay, sounds good.
only thing geekier than me doing the show is the fact that I had Jimmy Superfly Snuka's entrance music at like a fingertips touch away. Take care, everybody.